This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And, of course, a lot's going on with the Mariners right now. Joining us from the Mariners broadcast team, leader of the team, is Gary Hill. And so I guess we're just sitting by anticipating this deal with Robinson Cano should wrap up sometime today, maybe tomorrow. But it looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with everyone else. I'm just kind of sitting around waiting for it to be final. But, yeah, it seems like it's certainly headed down that road. And it seems like something that's going to happen in the very near future. But, yeah, we're waiting around, waiting for it to be official.
What's your thoughts on it? Because I guess really the thing that concerns me is trying to put the economics of the Robinson Cano deal in there. And, again, we'll find out how the money breakdown goes, because it appears that, okay, if they go half of the remaining $120 million, that's $60 million. But they have to pick up $26 million of Jay Bruce's contract and $8 million of the reliever's contract, Andrew Swarzis. And it's like that's in the first year or two, it's kind of a wash.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. I guess we don't know officially the finances yet. There is one thing that I think is pretty interesting in terms of the two guys you just mentioned, Jay Bruce and Anthony Swarzak, the reliever. Both of those guys bounce back candidates in that they really struggled last year. Those two guys too, who knows, they may get flipped before the season, or they may start the season on the Mariners roster, but those two potentially could build up some value before the All-Star break as well, and you could flip them at the All-Star break next season. I mean, we've seen Swarzak in particular, we've seen that with relievers. He had a really good year the year before, a ton of strikeouts. He struggled with injuries this past year, so it is realistic to think that he could build some value back, and the same with Jay Bruce, especially. You know, he is left-handed power pull hitter, and I've always liked that aspect of Safeco Field. I think he's got a chance to build some value back, too. So there is potential to get value back for both of those two. And you're getting a nice return of prospects, at least the names that we've heard so far. Again, it's kind of weird talking about this trade because it's not official, but just the names we've all seen. And I think the name that should get Mariner fans particularly excited is Jared Kelnick, the outfielder. I mean, he's young. He's 19, so it's going to be a while, but from everything I've seen, he has all-star potential and star potential. So that's a very exciting name in this deal. But we'll see what the finances, we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, of course, I mean, the one trade that was made yesterday is Omar Marvarius, I think it's Marvarius, coming over. A pretty good hitting catcher with the Chicago White Sox, Alex Colome going over to the White Sox in that trade. And so it looks like the idea is to get better hitting behind the plate.
Yeah, and he is exactly the kind of guy that you want to take a look at if you're in the Mariners' situation, because Narvaez had a really nice year last year. He had some playing time open up because Wellington Castillo got hit with a ban during the course of the season, so he took over the number one job, and he put together a really good slash line offensively. Now, the question is, can he build on that, or can he repeat that? And the Mariners are in that situation where that's exactly the kind of guy that you want to roll the dice on and try and figure out if he is that guy offensively. Because if he is, you have something pretty special offensively at catcher, because we've talked about it too, especially in the American League, there is just not a lot of offense coming from that position at all. Now, he's got some work to do defensively. You look at some of the numbers, pitch framing particularly, he's really struggled with pitch framing, but that's something that you can work on moving forward with him. You know, just there's not offense coming from the position, so that could be a really nice pickup for the Imps. He'll certainly get the playing time to prove it, and that's going to be something we'll see a common thread with, not only players that they'll pick up, but players that are already on the roster. I mean, Gamel, Vogelbach, go down the list. It's time now to find out who's going to be the core of this team moving forward, and that's going to be something we'll find out with Narvaez as well.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Yeah, but interesting part of the trade now, because now they got their starting catcher. But now the two things that they don't have, they lose their ace in James Paxton and their best two relievers, eighth and ninth inning, with Edwin Diaz likely going. And again, the deal's not done yet. And, of course, Alex Colome definitely going to the White Sox.
Yeah, and not done yet either. I don't think there's any question about that. I think there's going to be a ton of movement I think it's really hard to speculate what the holes will try and fill before the season, because I still think there's going to be a lot of roster movement before we get to spring training. So I would expect, and I mean, the names are kind of obvious when you scan the roster. I mean, the point now is to build this thing towards the future. So you look at who's on the roster, who you can get value for, and, you know, I like it. I mean, if you're going to go down this road, go down this road. Do it fully. Go at it and do it. I mean, it's too bad when a guy like Edwin Diaz isn't around. It's too bad when you trade James Paxton and Mike Zunino. I mean, that's not fun, but when you're building for the future, I mean, go all in, and that's what they're doing.
No question. What type of theme do you see Jerry DePoto doing? And again, it kind of goes to a lot of the themes and a lot of trades that he makes, is that he tries, if he can, to get, you know, first-round picks. And, you know, it worked very well with Marco Gonzalez. I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, almost I did this when I didn't have a chance to do it, but what I was going to do is going to look at when they were talking to the Yankees on Paxton, I was going to say, okay, so what former number one pick who's a left fielder who can hit home runs, who's that going to be? I didn't get a chance to do it. Didn't matter because they picked up a pitcher instead, but that seems to be one of his themes.
And the other theme I've kind of been looking at too is the guys they've been picking up for the most part, and Kelnick is the exception if this trade goes through, obviously, as guys are pretty close to the big leagues, either ready now or within maybe a year or two, especially with the Yankees deal. And that's something I find interesting as well, because if you can group a lot of guys similar, a year or two out, I mean, it kind of accelerates the whole timetable. And that's going to be an interesting part of this whole thing is, you know, it's partly a numbers game. You want to get as many prospects as possible, as many good prospects as possible, because you're not going to hit on every one. You're not going to hit on every trade. I mean, the Astros are a great example. Everyone kind of points to the Astros as the model, a team that rebuilt, but they didn't hit on everything. I mean, they released J.D. Martinez. I mean, they drafted Mark Appel early on. You know, not everything went perfectly, but they still made it the World Series, and part of it was they grouped so much talent, and that's kind of the goal. And if you can get it, you can get a group of talent near big league ready already, it certainly accelerates the process. And they're already accelerating the process because they're starting with an advantage that some teams, like Detroit, for example, aren't starting from, is they actually have assets that they're dealing to accelerate this whole process. The Tigers and some teams that are going down this road haven't had that luxury, so that should help as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you like this idea of trying to do a reset?
I do. I think it's I have sympathy for the people that have the view when you go into this year saying, well, they had a chance to make the playoffs. 89 wins. They were a good team last year. They had a chance to be a good team again this year. But there's a reality, I think, in the American League right now where Boston and Houston primarily are kind of at the zenith of their cycle. I mean, they're both really, really good. Throw in the Yankees as well. I mean, they were going to be really tough to compete with. And I'm not sure what the Mariners could have added along the way to try and knock those two off. I think this process was going to have to happen one way or another, either this year or next year. The problem was, if you waited, I mean, the value of guys like James Paxton, Mike Zunino go down the list. It takes a hit. Cano is another year older. I mean, the value really takes a hit. And if you determine that you're going to do this, I think now was the time to do it. And you kind of maximize the value for Paxton. We've seen it when guys just have 1 year left as opposed to 2 years left, the value really gets hit on what you can get back. So I think they maximize the value for Paxton. And they also have a chance to wait out the Houston cycle, the Boston cycle, and build towards that and build something with a little more longevity. I think that was going to be really hard to do with the current construction of the roster. So I like it. I like that they're doing it, and I like that they're doing it going all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that's kind of intriguing is that because, again, you're trying to follow the patterns that Jerry DePoto has come up with. I was kind of intrigued by the fact that, he's going with kind of smaller type players. because, again, you know he wants athletes in the outfield and athletes on the infield and all that. But Ricardo Sanchez is a 5'11 pitcher. You know, Justice Sheffield is 6 foot. And then they picked up Navarez, who is 5'11. I was kind of intrigued by that.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that. That's a good point. So I guess you're saying they won't be an NBA team.
No. Because I don't know. I'm trying to. You'll probably remember this better than me. Remember, I think was it Jack Cerenzik? I mean, he took a fastball 5'11 pitcher, and he struggled with injuries because, again, at 5'11, can you maintain 95, 97?
Right.
That's what I wonder
about. That's the question. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, it's kind of the beauty of baseball. I think there's really no size limitations.
No.
There's no size advantage or disadvantage. I mean, Jose Altuve is one of the best players in the game. He's 5'6".
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I hadn't thought about it, but I don't think size will stop anyone from being a star, a superstar, an all-star, or a good player, or anything like that. I don't think size is much limitation at all.
You would have to figure that one of the next guys to go is probably going to be Gene Segura. He does have the no-trade clause, and so he has to go to a team that he's going to accept. What then? What do you think opens up? Who goes to short?
Well, that's the great question, and that's kind of what I was alluding to before. I think there's going to be so much roster movement before the end of the season. I think it's nearly impossible right now to speculate who could start opening day at shortstop, because I still think, as you mentioned, I think Segura is one of the guys that is on the list. I don't know. I don't know if the shortstop's on the roster now. I mean, maybe it's D. Gordon sliding over. I don't know if it's the shortstop is not on the roster yet, is yet to be acquired, is yet to be signed. It's just so hard right now with so many moving parts with this roster and so much work yet to do. I think it's really hard to speculate. Really, not just shortstop, but any position at this point.
Oh yeah, no question. I mean, it's an ever evolving, changing thing. It does create some off season excitement, though.
Well, no doubt about that, and a lot of off season excitement, a lot of excitement. I think when springtime comes, because we get a first look at a lot of different guys, and moving through the season, and not only with the big club, but there's going to be a ton of interesting guys when this process is done in the minor leagues that we'll be watching very, very closely. Because now it's about, putting together as much talent as you can put together, and then it's about the development and watching these guys and watching them take a step forward and watching who becomes the core of this team moving forward, not only with the big club, but with the minor league guys as well. So that's going to be a very interesting and what I think is a fun process to watch as you try and build towards something great and looking at who's going to be a part of that. It's going to be a very, very interesting offseason. I think a very exciting next year just to watch the development of guys and who's going to be the core. I mean, that's going to be the question now. Who are going to be the core moving forward?
Okay, and so just stand by because more things are going to be happening, and I would imagine, stand by today because it's today, maybe tomorrow, to wrap up the Cano trade, and we'll see how that goes. Hey, Gary, thanks for joining us.
Oh, anytime, John. Yeah, no doubt about it. We're waiting.
Absolutely. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Suki. Suki, how are you?
Hi, Mr. Clayton. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, so I got a couple of things. So for tomorrow's game, how many times do you think Russell might test Sherman?
I would say no more than 3 or 4 times, and I certainly he's not going to throw a fade pass on him because I don't think I've ever seen a player do a fade pass defense better than Richard Sherman. But I could see some little turn-in routes or maybe some routes where he has to try to pull himself in the middle of the field, something that Doug Baldwin does so well. And they'll maybe, because I would have to think that would be more of the key. But I don't think he's going to throw on him too much because, you have better chances if you throw on the other side of the field. And again, it's like if you're trying to do that, you're just trying to do it more for ego than anything else. And this team's just trying to get the win more than the ego.
Do you think if Sherman gets torched like a few times, do you think Russell will take advantage of that?
I don't think so. I think they're just going to be smart about it. Because remember, it's like, you know, this is a game where I know that the 49ers are, you know, top 10 in the league in stopping the run, but they just need to run the ball and then just work the play action off of that and work the play action down the left side of the field, not the right side. So I think that, it's easier to try the other guys than it is Richard. Certainly you want to try to test both sides of the field if you can. But I think, you know, keep the ego out of it. Just be smart and win.
And also, I was thinking, for the remainder of the season, how do you think the season is going to turn out? I personally believe that they could still go 10-6, just like my preseason prediction. What do you think? Because I think the Chiefs might be the toughest challenge thrown out, but what do you got for that?
I think the Carolina game changed everything, because I still thought they would get to 9. Now I think the possibility is there at 10, because I think they have a great chance of winning the Minnesota game. And so now, I mean, you got the three games that you have against San Francisco and Arizona. That takes you to 9, and Minnesota takes it to 10. And if they lose the Chiefs game, they lose the Chiefs game. But I think at this stage, and again, the Chiefs are going to be different now that they don't have Kareem Hunt. So we'll see. But no, I think that, I mean, the biggest thing that they have to do is just split those two home games.
Quick final question. I was just going to say, do you think Seattle could make the Chiefs a one-dimensional team without Kareem Hunt?
Spencer Ware, you know, he's been here, is still pretty good. I don't know if you can make them a one-dimensional team because, again, they're just so talented. I mean, you know, they got one of the best tight ends in Travis Kelce. Tariq Hill is just really good. By that time, I'm sure that they're gonna be healthier at the wide receiver position. Sammy Watkins is gonna be back. You know, and the quarterback's sensational. So that's gonna still be a challenge because, you know, Andy will find a way to run the ball. But overall, I think that it's still down the line, chance to win there. But again, the key is getting San Francisco and Minnesota.
Cool. Thank you, Mr. Clayton. Have a good day.
All right, Suki. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Daniel in Renton. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I listen to your show every morning when I'm at work, and I'm working on the weekend, and you're on, so I actually have a little bit of time on my lunch to give you a call.
Thank you. What's up?
You're cutting out there. Yeah.
Okay,
sorry.
I'm here.
So my first question has to deal with Cam Chancellor. So I know he has the same kind of neck injury that Cliff Averill suffered. And there hasn't been too much talk about if he's trying to make a comeback or if he's going to fully retire. Do you have any thoughts on that, or if he's going to try to come back?
No, I don't think he is. I mean, he'll say that he is just because, again, remember, he's got a guarantee in his contract for next year. It's an injury guarantee. And so he'll say that he is, but in the end, I don't see it. I mean, and if you see him, he's lost a little bit of weight naturally because, again, he doesn't have to bulk up like he does to get ready for a regular season game. And so but the big thing is he's still around the facility. He's helping a lot of the young players try to develop. I mean, he's still a good part of this team. My hope would be that he would consider becoming a coach, because I think he can become a very good
too.
Coach.
I think that would be awesome if he could be a part of the team just as a coaching capacity, because for how many years he's played at such a high level, like you said, to be able to, you know, train the younger incoming rookies and establish, you know, a new identity for the defense would be optimal at this point, you know, for how young he is too. He's been around for a long time as a coach.
And again, it's like, okay, you want to spend time with family and all that stuff. That's expected. He's earned that right. So maybe it's within a year or 2 years. You know, I still think that Pete Carroll is going to be, you know, getting a contract extension, because look what he's done and look how well he's done it. And so if that's the case, I mean, that those options are all there and open.
Yeah, and I got one more question before I head back in. It's about the Mariners. I know that a lot of people over the last, like, 3 days have been talking about all the trades that have been going on, and it's not something that's going to go away anytime soon because, you know, I think it's going to go all the way up to the trade deadline of this upcoming season with people, you know, leaving the team and then new people coming in. My main thing was I like to say I am a Mets fan. That is my second team, my home away from home team. So with Cano and Diaz, you know, being in talks to go to the Mets, pretty excited about at least half of that trade.
Right.
With getting Diaz, it's tough to say how effective I think Cano is going to be going forward over the next, you know, 5 years left on that contract. He still hits very well and still hits for power, but I think the whole PED thing that happened this last season, I think, does kind of tarnish what people expect out of him, because back when, you know, during the, you know, early 90s to, you know, even up to the 2000s when you had all that home run stuff going on with Sosa and Barry Bonds, it's kind of like, if he does do well, are people going to keep saying, well, he was using stuff? Is he still using stuff?
Yeah, nobody will know. I mean, you know, this has, no question, tainted him to a certain degree, but say what you want, the guy can still hit. And, you know, that's, I think, right now what everybody's kind of looking for, and certainly that's what the Mets are looking for. And I guess what, a guy in the front office is going to be making this trade used to be his agent, one, or a part of his agents.
And I guess one more thing on that. I think I saw, it might have been on TV when DePoto was coming out talking about the offseason and the moves that were going to be, you know, happening before any names were kind of being thrown around. I think he did use the term like fire sale, if I remember correctly. Do you think that?
Yeah, who was saying fire sale?
Term,
who was saying that?
I thought DePoto. I thought Jerry DePoto came out, and if I remember correctly, I thought he used that term.
Yeah,
but
I don't know if
it
I
might
heard
have
that
been
one.
You know, another MLB Network person.
That one I don't know about. Because, again, I don't think you'd use the word fire sale. I mean, he's trying to, you know, get the best value for 2020 and 2021. So, you know, I don't think you're going to see a guy making trades like that say fire sale because he wants value.
Yeah, it might have been somebody probably
somebody commenting on what maybe he said, but not what he said.
Yeah, because I kind of figured, like, with all these moves they've been doing so far, like getting rid of Paxton, trading Zunino, you know, the move yesterday, moving Colome, they're definitely, I'm glad that they are making some moves as opposed to trading, like, our lower-end tier players for another team's lower-end tier players and seeing if something works out. So it is kind of refreshing. I mean, I'm old enough to be able to be, you know, watching in the mid-90s when they were, you know, awesome, and they had, you know, Griffey and Buehner and Dan Wilson, and everyone meshed well together, and it would be nice to eventually get back to a team that's like that.
Right.
Where everyone complements each other as opposed to relying on a free agent signing like they did with Cano, and they never really signed anyone around him to, you know, make that coalesce.
Mm-hmm. But there's going to be a lot of change. Stay tuned.
Yep.
Thank you for the
call. Yeah, I know. I appreciate it. Yeah, right. Thanks for taking my call, and look forward to seeing what happens with the Mariners over the next few days.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give you a little bit of a college football update here as far as what's going on. A lot of basketball games going on today, too. But, you know, looks like you know, the big one's still waiting to go, you know, well, Purdue, Michigan's going to play this afternoon. But I guess the big one right now is Texas and Oklahoma. Oklahoma leading 27-21, 7:31 left in the third quarter. So they're zipping along their way. Alabama's going to take on Georgia. That's going to be at 1 o'clock. Clemson and Pitt, that's at 5. Ohio State, Northwestern, that's at 5 o'clock. So, again, the conference championship game's going on. Let's go to Nick in Covington. Hey, Nick.
Hey, John. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm actually a boxing writer for Ring Magazine, but baseball is still my first love, so I'm trying to play catch-up on all this Cano Diaz talk. Maybe you can help me out a little bit. So there was one detail that kind of stuck out in the early part of the negotiations that I saw. They have a second baseman already, some young kid. I think his name is McNeil or something along those
lines.
Right.
There's been some talk that they're trying to get him involved, Jeff McNeil.
Right. And from what I've been sort of seeing on Twitter, at least, he might be out of the discussion. So my question would be, A, is that in fact true? And B, why won't we maybe make a harder push for this young stud, maybe give up a couple of those younger relievers and replace?
Well, I think what it came down to is that the complication in this thing is working around the Cano contract and how much the Mariners have to pick up and how much the Mets have to pick up. And so the way it seems to be heading, and again, it could switch and turn, is that, you know, they're going to get Jared Kelenic, the outfielder, who was a first round pick, the sixth pick in the draft last year. He's 19 years old. He's, you know, third in their prospect list, 62nd overall, tier two type of player. Then they get the fourth best prospect. prospect in Justin Dunn, who's a right-handed pitcher, 23 years old, 89th in the league as far as where he ranks on Baseball America, Tier 2 type player. And it seems like as much as they're trying to get Jeff McNeil, it looks like it's going to be Gerson Bautista, who's a right-handed pitcher, got some good arm strength, but again, it's kind of all over the place, along with getting Jay Bruce and Anthony Swarzak.
Okay, so is it more along the lines of we don't necessarily need McNeil as much because our infield for the time being is a little full, or is it because the Mets don't want to give him up?
Probably don't want to give him up. Yeah, I think I think what it comes down to is that they're comfortable giving up, you know, an outfielder and a pitcher. They didn't want to give up an infielder like that. And again, that's the thing. That's where the complication is, and I think we're still going back and forth. How much did the Mets pay on Cano's contract, and how much did the Mariners pay? But here's the weird part about it. I mean, you know, there's $21 million next year tied up in Jay Bruce and Anthony Swarzak, you know, because Bruce makes $13 million and Swarzak, who's 33, makes $8 million. And so, you know, it seems like the Mariners might be paying more this year, depending on how they break up the Cano contract. So we'll see where it goes. But that's where I think everything is kind of getting done. But it'll get done, it looks like. It just doesn't look like McDeal's going to get in the mix.
All right, fair enough. So I guess for your opinion, is this trade going to be a win for us if we don't have McNeil? Are you okay with those relievers, personally?
I'm not sold on the whole philosophy. I didn't think the idea of tearing it down like this. And what I think is the big problem is, you know, throwing, because again, what you wonder about, here's Diaz, one of your best trading assets, right? And now you've traded Zunino, you traded Paxton, and then you've traded, or you're in the process of trading, you know, Diaz, and all, you know, so far, I mean, you're almost leveling out with a number of prospects, and you've given away, you know, your ace pitcher and your best two bullpen guys. And sure, I mean, you've now picked up maybe six guys in your top 25, but how many are going to be in your top 5, 6, or 7? That to me is what the concern is. I mean, they're getting good prospects, but are they getting the volume for what they're giving up?
Right, and it sounded like that the Atlanta Braves were willing to give up quite a few guys in their farm system, or maybe the Phillies as well. And so we're kind of settling on this whole Mets deal. But
yeah, and of course, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. Because what you bring up is that, you know, the Mets started this, I think by midseason they were the 27th best minor league system, and I think they peaked out at the end at 23. But the Braves are among the best.
Right. So and I'm wondering, can there be a dark horse in this? Maybe the Phillies or the Braves come back into this, you know, thinking, hey, we don't want the Mets to have Diaz. We don't want them to have Cano, although they probably won't care about Cano as much.
You could say until a deal is done, anything can happen. But I'd say right now, the most of the reporting on it, and you know from being in this business, you know, when most of the reporting is as solid as this, it's going to happen. But again, like anything else, it's not done till it's over.
All right, fair enough. So our Seattle guy and John Clayton isn't exactly thrilled with the deal, and the New York Mets fans aren't thrilled with the deal, so maybe it's just a wash.
Yeah, it could be. Expensive wash, but a wash nonetheless. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks, John. All appreciate it.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dave in Bellevue. Hey, Dave.
Hey there, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am really confused on some of this. I understand giving up Diaz. Relievers like him have a short shelf life, and he's probably got maximum trade value. And I even understand Paxton because he's set for free agency soon. But what I don't get is all the talk about Segura. Nobody talks about trading Haniger. I mean, and I like them both. But Segura is one of the top shortstops in the American League. He's only 29. He's the kind of person that's young and you can build your team around. And I'm just sort of lost on why they want to get rid of Segura. He's a primo player that I don't want us to get rid of.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems that maybe some friction in the dugout and in the clubhouse is one of the reasons. And, you know, he is an all-star, and so there's value there. And he, it seems almost inevitable that he's going to be the next to go. And I can see your point. I mean, you want to keep these guys. But, you know, and, of course, the great thing, he's got a very affordable contract.
Yeah, I'm just lost on that, unless he's just not a clubhouse guy at all. But I know he had that one blow up with D. Gordon, but they were just frustrated that last third of the year where they just sort of fell apart.
Right.
I saw that coming. You couldn't consistently have negative numbers on the run differential and continue to win. We just won a lot of close games early, and I saw that coming. But at the same time, he's the kind of player you want to build your team around. He's young. He's controllable. The guys that we're getting rid of, we really didn't have a lot of control over them. So I was fine with that, but I'm not fine with Segura.
Nope. I mean, this one is it's again, I'm sorry. I'm not buying in. So yet, I mean, we'll see. I'm certainly open to it. You know, I'm a big I'm not a supporter of Jerry DePoto, but I appreciate, because what I appreciated most of what he did last year was, in the last 2 years, is pick up a lot of controlled contracts of good players. I mean, you know, the trade for Taiwan Walker, I mean, you get two all-stars out of it, Segura, and then you get Mitch Haniger. I mean, that's just great stuff. And they're all with affordable contracts.
Yeah. I'm just not buying into their rebuild. I understand they want to rebuild the farm system.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're giving away the farm, and they're going to give away the fans, too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because I want peace. Those games are exciting. I go to a lot of games. Those games are exciting when we've got a chance to win, and when you're saying, we're just going to rebuild, we don't really care about winning, that just bothers me.
Mm-hmm. No, it's going to be different, no question about it. And the sad part is, for Mariner fans, that means it's going to take you more than two decades to get back to the playoffs.
Yeah, that bothers me. Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Mount Vernon. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, Professor. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm going to change it back to what's going on seasonally right now, which is football.
All right.
I'm kind of concerned about tomorrow. It has nothing to do with Richard Sherman coming back. Worried about the way the ball's been running right down the middle of the Seahawks defense the last couple of weeks. You know, they won.
Mm-hmm.
With all that stuff that McCaffrey did last week against, you know, with the passes out of backfield, he still had a lot of inside runs, and he broke off a couple. And he's actually one of the, you know, top-tier backs in the league. And I don't think Breida is that close, but I'm still a little concerned about it. And that's really my only concern about tomorrow, with the exception of them taking care of their business, you know, working game to game, running the ball, no turnovers, special teams, and flexing between the 20s.
Yeah. Well, see, and I think that's just being overly concerned because, again, these are winnable games. And,
oh, no, I got that. I know that. But I'm not sure what's happened all of a sudden to the.
No, I can tell you exactly what happened. Schedule. They had five games against, you know, playoff caliber teams with good quarterbacks. Simple as that.
Great quarterbacks. Yeah, I know.
I was like, it's like when you. I mean, this was the toughest part of their schedule. They came out 3-2. You knew. Right. I mean, these quarterbacks can all throw for 300 yards. You knew the stats were going to go. You know. I mean, you've now taken on some of the best running backs in the league during that stretch. I mean, that to me is easily explainable.
Definitely. Okay. Well, I'm glad I'm over concerned about nothing that needs to be concerned about.
I mean, again, complacency can be something you can be concerned about. They just have to make sure that they perform well, get the victory, come out pretty much injury free.
I really don't think they're going to be complacent tomorrow. I think they're going to be on fire coming out onto the field and through the game. I don't even think it's going to be close. But like I said, Britton just kind of concerned me running the way he runs in
right.
the middle of the field. So that was it.
Stay tuned.
Have a great weekend and go Hawks.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave.
Hey, what's up, John Clayton?
So what'd you think of last night?
Man, I loved it. First, let me just say this. Man, I got to give a shout-out to Jim Moore first for the funniest run-on sentence I've ever read. Moving to last night, man, I do have to give a shout-out to the Rose Bowl-bound Washington Huskies, who became the Pac-12 champ for a second time in 3 years. And prove once again, John Clayton, that defense wins championships. Like Coach Sontag would say, if they can't score, they can't win. You know, Keith Brown and Gary McKechnie know what I'm talking about. The Pac-12 number one and number two defenses squared off for all the marbles, and the Utes couldn't score, and the Huskies scored on defense. And in the words of Axel Foley, it don't get no cleaner than that. You know, the other thing, John Clayton, that that game underscored is that it doesn't have to be a shootout to be a good game. The suspense of what is going to happen next is makes a good game. And I will say, however, John Clayton, the suspense was suspended on an obvious pass interference at the end, and I can see why Coach Whittingham lost his mind when it wasn't called, and that's the problem with refs calling the games based on the point of the game. At any other time, that would be a flag, and I would just prefer they throw the flag and let the dogs prove it on the next play. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was a different game. It wasn't the most exciting game, but it was a victory that really, you know, got everything set up in a pretty good spot right now for this team.
Yeah, exactly. Look, moving to the Seahawks, John Clayton, last week against the Carolina Panthers, the Hawks proved they're basically the Ike and Tina Turner of the NFL. They can never do anything nice and easy. They have to do everything nice and rough. Nonetheless, your buddy Peter King said it was the most impressive road win in the NFL this season. And now back home against the San Francisco 49ers, I've heard more whining from the Seahawks fans about the return of Richard than I have from San Francisco 49er fans that their team is, 2-9. And the funny thing is, the Seahawks fans who are adamant about erecting a statue outside of the stadium of the tip are probably the babies doing the most whining. Mm-hmm. You know, the bottom line is the 2013 NFC title game, Colin Kaepernick could have run it in and taken the 49ers to the Super Bowl, but he decided to pass, and Richard Sherman, number 25, made the play that led to the Seahawks winning Super Bowl 48. The end. Go Hawks! Rock and roll. Talk to you, John Clayton.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Thank you.
Hey, yeah, excellent work on Monday, John. I was provided a lot of good information, good questions on the side. So,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's fun to turn the regular sound off and put you on serious on Westwood One. Hey, with Denver taking two straight games from San Diego and Pittsburgh, do you think they have the push to get to the playoffs if they win out?
I don't think they have the push to win out. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they're playing well enough now that it may save Vance Joseph's job. Again, schedule may not be the most difficult. I mean, you know they're not going to catch the Chargers, right? The Chargers just have too much of an edge right now, so it's a matter of staying ahead of a couple teams, and I still, coming from 4-6 is going to be tough. There's no margin of error, and there's still going to be error. So I think that, they can make a good run toward the end, and I think you can see these have been two. Well, I don't know if you want to call the Charger game was intriguing, but they got outplayed so bad at different points of the game. I mean, what was it, 37-22 as far as a time of possession? I mean, I know Phillip Rivers said it should have been a 33-7 game, but the way that they fought back and won was sensational. So I think there's a little bit of life there, but I just don't know if there's going to be enough life to be able to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's good to see the pressure come alive, because for a couple games when they were losing, they weren't any pressure on the quarterback, and that would be the problem. You know, they sit back there and just wait. And then a couple quick ones. John, with the injuries on the offensive line, the last 2 weeks, it seems like Denver's had better production from their offensive line going to their second, third string team. Can you give me a reason?
I think just, good coaching more than anything else, because when you start running out of bodies like that, how are you going to survive? They've been able to, at least get some good things going there, but that still concerns me. I mean, you can't lose 2-3 starters on the offensive line and think it's going to be good, particularly with a left tackle first round draft choice is struggling as bad as he is. I mean, he really is struggling, and that's got to be a concern too. But again, I give Vance credit, I give Case Keenum credit, I give the defense credit, and still, I mean, give Von Miller some credit too, because he and Bradley Chubb, what a combination that is.
Yeah, it's what happens when you're not giving over turnovers all the time.
Right.
That what Case probably earlier in the year. And then one last one, John. I know with all the troubles also at tight end with them losing Heuermann.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Butt has a chance of coming back next year, being at 100%?
Debatable. That's two injured years that he's had. I think it's going to be more. They're going to have to get somebody in the draft.
All right, take care, John. Have a good
thank you.
Much.
Quickly, let's go to James in Des Moines. Hey, James.
Hey, John. I got two quick questions. One, Why is Edwin Diaz being packaged around with Robinson Cano
to dump some of the salary and try to get as much value as he can? I'm with you. See, I'm not for that. I think you got to do separate deals because, again, you're not going to get value for Cano. But if the idea is to dump salary, but then they're picking up $8 million on a reliever and $13 million on an outfielder.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Got to be brief here. Got to be brief.
When are you going to be back on Part of My Take with Big Cat and PFD?
I do not know that. Maybe not soon.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thank you so much. And, of course, I'll be back on Monday at 10, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.